It sounds obvious that a school should report allegations of sexual abuse right away. But when the alleged abuser is a teacher or another school employee, lawyer Tim Conlin says the reality is that doesn't always happen.
Most instances where these allegations come to light, the perpetrator is in denial or fabricating excuses. It's rare that an administrator is given a clear-cut case.
Conlin has handled many cases of sexual abuse involving schools and the Catholic Church. He says institutions like that generally want to avoid controversy.
And you often will have parents who would love to avoid putting their student or their child in a position of having to testify or proceed with some formal action. So what I've seen in many school departments is a tendency for the administration to look for the easy out, which is a resignation.
So the employee resigns, but may find new employment at another school. And there's no public record or any official investigation into the allegations of child abuse. Conlin says part of the problem may lie in the murky language of Rhode Island law. In cases he's pursued, the State Child Welfare Agency, DCYF, or DCF, as it was known in the 70s and 80s, didn't get involved in allegations of sexual abuse involving teachers and students.
I can tell you that going back historically, they absolutely did not. And I can tell you that as a result, multiple school entities indicated they weren't reporting these to DCF because in the instances where they had, they were told DCF didn't do anything.
In the sexual abuse scandal involving St. George's School in Middletown, attorneys for the school's former students and newspapers like the Boston Globe and the Providence Journal have repeatedly cited Rhode Island's mandatory reporting law for abused and neglected children. The law appears clear. It says anyone who knows or suspects a broad range of child abuse, including sexual abuse, must report it to DCYF within 24 hours. But there's a loophole.
The mandatory child abuse and neglect reporting statute, which has been in place since the early 80s, applies to parents and guardians or employees of DCYF licensed child care programs.
Mike Rea, spokesman for the State Department of Health and Human Services and DCYF, says the mandatory reporting statute applies only when the abuser is a parent, legal guardian, or a person licensed by DCYF, like a foster parent or an employee at a residential care facility. When asked whether a school should report abuse involving teachers to DCYF, Rea says no.
That investigative authority is in the purview of law enforcement. And should a case along these lines come in, we would direct that toward law enforcement for a proper criminal investigation.
Rea says schools should report allegations of abuse involving their employees directly to law enforcement. Yet the mandatory reporting statute fails to mention that requirement. And DCYF's interpretation of the law leaves a question about whether any legal requirement exists to report abuse suspected of a school employee, a church employee, or even a civic organization like the Boy Scouts. What is clear is that DCYF would not investigate those reports. Another attorney who's handled cases involving sexual abuse, Amato DeLuca, agrees that schools should go directly to police. If there's any question about sexual abuse,
then I think they have to err on the side of caution and protecting the students, and that's their job.
DeLuca points to a duty under the law to use what's known as reasonable care. In other words, you have to do what's reasonable under the circumstances. And DeLuca says a school has a special responsibility to educate and protect their students.
If they see anything untoward, for example, like in this case, a sexual assault or sexual abuse or bullying for that matter, they have an obligation and responsibility to do something about it, either tell a parent or bring in authorities to deal with it.
And with child welfare officials out of the picture, the authorities to bring in are the police. But pursuing prosecution for sexual assault can be tricky, especially when the victim is older than 16.
The unfortunate reality is that it is not a crime for a teacher to have sex with a 16 or 17-year-old student in Rhode Island.
Again, family lawyer Tim Conlin.
You could argue that it should be a crime. But The reality is that the cops, and I could show you multiple police reports in which the cops walk away from a criminal prosecution on the theory that the 16-year-old girl could validly consent to sex with the teacher. Now, I think that that's absurd.
Conlin thinks schools should report all forms of alleged sexual abuse as often and as loudly as possible to law enforcement, child welfare officials, and the State Department of Education, which can revoke a teaching license, even if none of those agencies take action. In his experience, silence can be dangerous.
Sadly, you can have instances where a culture of acceptance develops within an institution, whether it's a school, it could be a civic organization, it could be a parish church, where the persons who are involved in that institution have become accustomed to a code of silence, if you will. And that code of silence allows the perpetrator to continue to offend.
Mandatory reporting laws are intended to break that culture of silence by requiring teachers, social workers, and others to report suspicions of child abuse. But Rhode Island's law is written more narrowly than many people think, and it leaves schools and other organizations without a clear legal path to follow when the abuse involves their employees. Elizabeth Harrison, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Education reporting on Rhode Island Public Radio is funded in part by a grant by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.
Peg Langhammer pulls up a chair in a conference room at Day One, the organization she runs for survivors of sexual abuse. She is driving an amendment to Rhode Island's mandatory child abuse and neglect reporting law to make it clear that schools must report employees suspected of abusing students to the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families.
And this really came to light as a result of all of the St. George's cases, when St. George's interpretation of the statute was that they didn't have to investigate, they didn't have to report to CYF, and so there was no investigation after many cases of alleged abuse.
Those cases include a former athletic director, a choir director, and a chaplain, all at the Episcopal St. George's boarding school. And while the school fired some employees accused of abuse, they never reported them to child welfare officials. After the scandal went public, another question emerged. Would DCYF investigate a school if someone did report abuse? DCYF says no, that would be a matter for the police. And that worried advocates like Langhammer.
Concern with that is that people don't always want to go to the police first, and sometimes there needs to be an investigation, as we see in so many cases of child abuse, child sexual abuse. With DCYF getting involved early on, it can build a better case. It can determine whether or not there is enough to go forward with a legal case. The legal piece of it is not where people go first all the time.
In fact, Langhammer estimates that just 16% of all sexual assaults get reported to police. She was surprised when DCYF said it would not investigate inside a school, and so was the Rhode Island Attorney General.
For as long as anybody in this office can remember, going back over 30 years, our interpretation of the mandatory reporting statute is that it would cover schools and educators.
Amy Kemp is the spokeswoman for Attorney General Peter Kilmartin.
It's absolutely unfathomable, especially if you think that a school, particularly even say a boarding school, has a great deal of custodial responsibility of children.
The Attorney General may be right, but Langhammer decided not to wait for a court case to find out. She gathered a group of legislators and state officials to write schools into the mandatory abuse reporting statute.
We were as shocked as they were, but, you know, having said that, it's not okay to just let it be. You know, we felt, okay, if we can make it crystal clear, then let's do it.
If the bill passes, DCYF says it would give them new authority to investigate sexual abuse in public and private schools and homeschool settings. That's important because sexual abuse can be difficult to prosecute, and criminal courts require proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But DCYF uses a different standard. Jamia McDonald currently oversees the agency.
So we have preponderance of the evidence. So if an investigation ends up being indicated, which means there is a preponderance of the evidence that that action had occurred, it would be what we call indicated in our system.
so future employers would know the agency found strong evidence of sexual abuse, or that's the idea. But the database is available only to DCYF and its contractors, not schools and many other organizations that work with children. And there's another catch. DCYF says this proposed bill does not give them authority to investigate religious or civic organizations like the Boy Scouts. Those cases would still be referred to police.
He's waiting for an amendment, so I don't know if he's ready Wednesday or Thursday.
At the State House, in her office above the Senate chambers, Senate Majority Whip Mary Ellen Goodwin prepares for the final days of the legislative session. Goodwin sponsored the amendment adding schools to the mandatory child abuse reporting law, and she admits it's not perfect.
Each little step we take to try to protect our state's children is important, and I think that this is one of it, requiring DCYF to take action within 24 hours of a suspected sexual assault of a child. I think this is a beginning step. I mean, is this going to solve all the problems? No, it's not. Sadly, it's not.
It's a step that has support from advocates like Day One, the Attorney General's office, and child welfare officials. It's passed the Senate, but lawmakers have yet to take this bill up in the House, and the days of the General Assembly session are waning. Elizabeth Harrison, Rhode Island Public Radio.